The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional for any health concerns. Take care of yourself out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unraveling. This is a podcast that looks at the world through the lens of mental health, seeking answers and overall, and most importantly, understanding for all of us. I'm Mary Wilson, and I'm a former TV journalist.
And I'm Kurt White, psychotherapist and social worker by training, professor of social work at times, and someone who really likes to sit with people and try to get the story underneath the story, complicate our world and our judgments, to try to shine a light on what hidden truths and hidden understandings might be available to us if we can only ask the right questions.
Yeah, and coming from that news industry, I know that we're always looking for just the soundbite, and this will give us that opportunity to delve deeper and have more meaningful and impactful conversations.
Great to be here with you, Mary, on episode one of Unraveling.
And we have a great guest today, Dr. Carl Jeffries, who is going to help us unravel LGBTQIA issues with mental health. And of course, it is Pride Month, Kurt.
And it's had me thinking about what this means. What is Pride anyway, actually? And the sort of related topics that come up when I think about it, community, being seen, the sort of courage to take a stand in one's own identity in the world, and the sort of conditions that have to be right for that to feel like a safe enough thing to do.
And it wasn't very long ago, was it 50 years, when homosexuality was classified as a mental illness? Is that right?
That's really true. The mental health field has a dark history with this, as some other things, that actually until 1973, within many people's lifetimes, this was true. And it was had to be a courageous group of people over a period of time lobbied for that to be different, including in a very dramatic story, actually, that most people see as the catalyst for it actually changing the minds of folks at the American Psychiatric Association.
And this was Dr. Anonymous, correct?
Yes, the famous Dr. Anonymous is a name. Actually, it's Dr. John Fryer, but it wasn't known for a long time. He was a gay psychiatrist who actually showed up at a meeting of the American Psychiatric Association in a full mask. Wow. Over his whole head, disguising himself, and introduced himself. He said, I am a homosexual, and I am a psychiatrist. And he really argued for the removal of homosexuality from the, what they call the DSM, the manual that defines what the mental illnesses are, which a lot of people say is problematic, actually, you know, because who gets to decide these things, right? But it's supposed to be based in strong evidence, but hasn't always been. And really, this act of courage really could have cost him his whole career and livelihood. He was very aware of that, you know. But he said afterwards of it, he said, we're taking an even bigger risk, however, in not fully living our humanity with all the lessons it has to teach all the other humans around us. That's the greatest loss, our honest humanity. And that loss leads to all those others around us to lose that little bit of their humanity as well.
So just one really big act of courage there, but those small acts of courage continue every moment, right? As we're trying to make progress in this, and there's still a long ways to go.
It's really true. I'd like to hope that we have actually made some progress and strides in this over time. There are some troubling statistics, I think.
There are some troubling statistics, including a 2018 study published by the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry that reported about 50 to 60% of transgender people experience depression at some point in their lives. A Trevor Project research study in 2022 found 20 to 25% of transgender youth have attempted suicide. And recently, the FBI even released a report that found in 2022 there were 469 recorded hate crimes against trans and gender nonconforming people. And that's a 33% increase from the prior year.
Those are definitely sobering statistics, that something very distressing is going on in our society even right now. So there's a lot of progress perhaps that's been made, but maybe a lot that has yet to be made, and some that has been made, maybe we've lost some of it, actually, and that there's been backsliding. And so today we're going to interview Dr. Carl Jeffries. He's a psychiatrist. He is the chief medical officer at the Brattleboro Retreat, psychiatric hospital in Vermont, and the sponsor of this podcast. And he is someone who has used his personal and professional experience to inform the way that he thinks about working with LGBTQIA plus individuals and advocating for their rights, their well-being, and their humanity over a course of several decades.
That sounds great. Let's take a listen now.
Come in. All right. Oh, this is so great. Thanks for making time here.
You're welcome.
Great, great. It's a pleasure to have you here today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Kurt. I'm very honored to be here.
Dr. Jeffries, we're especially excited to have you here today because we wanted to do a deep dive into issues in the transgender community that touch upon your specific area of expertise in mental health. And we want to really dig in and explore misconceptions about this that exist both inside and outside of the mental health field, and to explore this at the level of both the individual and the larger social context in which people are living their lives and trying to find ways to fully participate authentically in a society that may not always welcome them. Well, how about then, let's start with what are some of the misconceptions or myths surrounding transgender mental health that you've encountered in your years of practice?
Well, I think probably the biggest one is that the mental health issues that someone who is trans-identified navigate is an inherent part of being trans, and that trans identity itself is a mental illness, as opposed to the challenges that someone who is trans identified navigates in a world that is not designed to recognize, validate, and provide any sort of positive reinforcement for someone who is born with that identity.
Where do you think that comes from?
I think it comes from a fear of difference. I think it comes from lack of information. I think there's an inherent sexist root to a lot of this. I think there's a tremendous fear, particularly among the male portion of our population, about being perceived as feminine or in a feminine way.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly noticed that this has become a social inflection point. I mean, people who are perhaps in need of education seem willing to sort of fight wars about this, you know, pass laws in state legislatures designed to sort of restrict access, not even just to sort of healthcare services, but sometimes to basic services like education or bathrooms or things like that.
Yes, absolutely. As someone who grew up gay, it's very difficult for me to try to understand someone who dismisses someone else's basic humanity, and that someone's gender identity that is different somehow is offensive to other people in ways that it needs to be controlled, it needs to be stopped, even at the expense of that other person's humanity.
And so I think as a psychiatrist, what about that training has been helpful for you in approaching the sort of underlying humanity of a person who has a trans identity?
That's a good question. I hope that my training in psychiatry is helpful across the board. I think it's so easy when we're dealing with mental health related issues to transpose those onto the quality of that person. And I think that the ability to separate that out and to identify that there's a human that we're working with and there may be something else that we are navigating and supporting them with regard to their health. I think that that's the education that I would want for the rest of the world to have about trans identity and sexual identity and anything that is something that makes someone different. I really don't want to conflate or in any way sort of imply that trans identity is somehow related to a mental illness. I'm talking more about the approach and the ability to stay in touch with the human who's there, regardless of what it is that you're navigating.
I've noticed that psychiatry, like much of the rest of the world, likes its categories. You know, people like to imagine that gender categories were handed down from on high. Some people literally say that, for example. But actually, sort of the historian in me wants to say, actually, wait a minute, the way that we understand these things were invented, you know, in the 19th and 20th century and actually don't really necessarily have much relationship to any kind of absolute reality.
Yeah. My understanding of the psychiatry categories is that they can be helpful in some ways and they can be detrimental in many ways as well. And that the truth is that as humans, we are such a conglomerate of so many different things that every aspect of who we are exists on some level of a spectrum, even mental illness. There are people with very severe illness and then there are those with less. And our sense of identity exists on a spectrum, who we are, our personalities. And that's going to be true for gender as well as sexual identity, not categorized in this binary way.
Yeah. What about specifically the diagnosis of gender dysphoria? How does that sort of play out in clinical encounters? Because I know that sometimes having that diagnosis is a thing that one needs in order to have access to gender-affirming care. And yet there can be a feeling in the trans community that they don't want a diagnosis from psychiatry related to this.
Correct.
And this must be something to navigate.
It is one of the more challenging aspects of the treatment. The treatment can actually be incredibly helpful for someone's mental health. Being trans-identified and not having access to gender-affirming healthcare, along with gender-affirming environment, gender-affirming clothes, can be very detrimental to someone's health. And so receiving that can be helpful for the care. It doesn't mean that there is an illness that needs to be treated. And the gender dysphoria diagnosis is something that is necessary for people to receive hormone treatment, hormone suppression treatment, any sort of surgical interventions in their gender affirmation process, and yet implies that there is an illness that needs to be treated. And who we are as humans, how we are born, is not an illness.
That's right. Well, and it has been said that even dividing the world into people with complicated and uncomplicated gender identities is probably itself a false binary, that gender is a complicated struggle for everybody as part of the human condition.
Absolutely. The conversation that I have with parents is, if we think about our own process and our own development through middle school, high school, very rarely do I find somebody who at the age of 12 imagine themselves exactly as they are now. So they have gone through their own process of identity, and it's across the board. Am I going to be a train engineer or am I going to be a veterinarian? You know, who am I going to associate with? How do I want the world to see me as a human? What aspects of my masculine self, what aspects of my feminine self, as well as sexual orientation. So I would say it is complicated for everyone.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed that in working with graduate students in my teaching and younger people generally, that they've grown up in a different world than I grew up in, with very rigid categories and boundaries around issues of gender as well as sexual orientation. And to see the world from their perspective is very interesting because they have a kind of a freedom that to sort of explore more complicated parts of themselves than I think was really allotted very easily to most of the dominant culture, even a couple decades ago. At the same time, I think it also, it complicates the work that they have to do to be full citizens of the world and to know themselves.
That's correct. I do think that we as a society will benefit from understanding that better and providing the support around that exploration. There is potential benefit from a constructed identity that you fit into and you just know that, like, that's who I am and that's what's going to happen for me. And there can be complications that come from, oh, I don't have to be that. I can consider other things. And yet what we would need is a society that supports that process to help somebody go through that exploration without feeling lost or I don't have a sense of who I am. We want them to have a full sense of who they are at their core and be able to explore that safely.
And the dark side of it, I think sometimes we see, don't we, in various statistics around this group with higher rates of things like attempted suicide or even completed suicide or sometimes diagnosed mental health conditions or sort of even among young people as well as adults. Do you want to speak to that in this context also?
Absolutely. Across the board, higher rates of substance use disorders. I think it's really difficult to know fully everything that goes on that leads and contributes to these things. However, I think it is well accepted, and the studies definitely show that the more support someone can have around those explorations, the less likely they are to suffer from the mood impact, the less likely to have suicide attempts, to feel hopeless, worthless, aimless. And then certainly the profound negative backlash and messaging that is out there, that there is something that is inherently wrong with exploring this, is incredibly detrimental and risky.
Well, and I think that gets to the, you know, you ended up starting there, which is a point I was also had very much on my mind when we were talking, that sort of a classic way of looking at mental health is that the problem is inside of the person. Sometimes that's a useful framework for categorizing, understanding, and helping folks. But I'm also a social worker, and I was trained to look at systems and understand things in much more complicated ways than that. And I wonder if we might look at many of these even really significant, serious mental health indicators that show up in statistics as actually indicators more of a social problem than a problem in the individual. And how could we be therapists both to that society as well as to the individual who comes to us for help?
That's incredibly difficult to answer. Education, information, advocacy, trying to understand some of the obstacles that there might be out there to people just finding their way to it. When I was going through my own coming out process and in my 20s, there was just a really big movement to come out, that like the more exposure, the more people knew us, the more likely we were to be accepted and understood. It's one thing to talk negatively about this hypothetical, and yet when it's your own child, oh, maybe I can rethink this. Taking every advantage and opportunity to let people get to know us as who we are, and that I think is another way.
My mother was a psychologist, as you know, and she used to talk about saving the world one person at a time. Sometimes that's true. I hear you saying that, you know, making a place where someone can safely explore the complexities of their own identity might be life-saving for them.
Correct.
And that some people might find their way to that through the mental health system. Is that true?
Yeah. And one of the most gratifying aspects of my work when I was on the LGBTQ unit was those individual experiences when I saw someone come in and in that space be provided an opportunity to explore themselves and to see the transformation that was able to take place, the sense of future, the joy in celebrating themselves for the first time, for some of these people, the first time in their lives that they've been able to say, I am celebrating who I am, was really a profound opportunity and something that I really treasured.
And what would you say to that, 14-year-old that's sort of silently struggling with this in an environment that they're not sure is safe or not? Do you have any thoughts or words of advice for that young person?
I think reaching out and asking for the support of someone who has identified themselves as a potential safe support. I think one of the most painful things for me to be watching right now in what's going on around the country is the removal of some of those supports within the education system, because so many of our adolescents, that can be their only potential opportunity to find some sort of safe level of support. So I would say, find it wherever you can. They exist in every community, even if it doesn't feel like they exist in communities. Make an anonymous phone call and ask what supports are there to some of these resources, and then make those connections. Because I think the biggest challenge for that 14-year-old is the feeling of isolation, the feeling of worthlessness, and the feeling that there just is no potential option out there. I know, because I felt it and experienced it when I was 14.
Are there any particular resources that you have in mind where if people wanted to learn more about this subject that they could go to educate themselves?
locally, there generally tend to be some sort of queer supportive organizations that make themselves known, that have flyers up in some of the alternative coffee shops or other places where you can just find a local resource, which can often be the most helpful. But if you don't have access to those, going online, if someone can do those searches safely at home without fear of that search history being found, for our trans youth, one of the first places I will recommend they go is to Gender Spectrum. It's an organization that is really about supporting the exploration of gender for our youth, and particularly paying attention to the education systems and how to support educational systems with someone who is exploring that. But it's also just a tremendous online resource for potential resources, who to connect to, what books you might read, all of that stuff.
Wonderful. It has been such a great pleasure to have you talk with me about this today. I'm really moved in understanding the sort of depth of your commitment to these issues over a lifetime of a psychiatric practice, and just thank you so very much for it.
Oh, thanks, Kurt, for having me, and I think for dedicating this podcast to this. It boggles my mind that we are still, to this day, navigating the depths of discrimination that exist, particularly for our trans community, but across the board, LGBTQ in general, that we've made a lot of strides in my lifetime. And, you know, the fact that I was able to get married was something I could have never imagined. And we are still navigating such profound discrimination, such negative messaging. Any opportunity to get some positive messaging, to get some information out there, the education is just critically important to the survival of those of us in the community. So thank you.
Thank you. Many thanks again to Dr. Jeffries for that very interesting and stimulating interview. I know it brought up a lot for me. Here with me again is Mary Wilson, my co-host on this podcast, to talk with me about it a little bit. Mary, what did this interview bring up for you?
Yeah, it was really impactful when he spoke about his life as a 14-year-old who was feeling isolated and misunderstood. And I thought it was great that he was able to open up about that and share where he is now, which is in stark contrast to where he was all those years ago.
It was a very powerful moment for me, too, for him to say, I know this is true because I remember it and I lived it.
Yeah. And what really struck me in you speaking with him is that each and every one of us have our own process of identity that we go through from childhood to adult. It's not easy for a lot of us. But the trans community especially, it's so challenging because they're up against so much, the hostility and discrimination. And I like how he emphasized that really we need to create a society where we are open to everyone exploring their own identities. And did you get a sense of maybe how we can all help to make that possible?
I think I did. I think these very interconnected issues of identity, community, and safety are themes that have stayed with me as I've thought about this conversation with Dr. Jeffries since, that identity can be a tremendous asset, a tremendous resource in helping us feel like whole human beings that have a place in this complicated world of ours, and that we're not alone in it. But that's where the community comes in. Mm. We need others who can reflect that back to us, others who can share parts of it with us and come to us and say, yeah, I'm a bit like that too. And also for people to reflect the parts of us that are not shared necessarily, that are just unique to ourselves in ways that feel good and safe and welcoming. And it's very hard when there's not a safe and welcoming environment. You know, you hear it with Dr. Jeffries talking about, like, yes, you got to find somebody, but also make sure it's a safe somebody. Make sure it's a safe way to do it. And so I think it's, for me, it's sort of about, how can we collectively get more and more and more people to be safe and welcoming others for anyone who might be struggling with an identity that isn't validated in their day-to-day lives?
We want people to feel supported, and we don't want anyone to feel isolated, right?
That's right, yeah. And it sounds like that would be easy, but very often, for whatever reason, people tend to have to work to be welcoming when an experience is not immediately shared with their own experience. experience, right? We sort of talk about things like compassion and empathy as good things when I think most of us would say they're good things. But I think the part that we don't talk about a lot is that actually they require a lot of work.
And sometimes empathy isn't enough and you need to hear from people with lived experience. And I know that we'll be doing that coming out in our next episode, Kurt.
We sure will. I'm really looking forward to it. Unraveling is brought to you by Brattleboro Retreat and is produced by Charts and Leisure.
Find us on social media by searching Brattleboro Retreat.
For those interested in more resources that are trans-supportive, check out Trans Lifeline at translifeline.org or by calling their hotline at 877-565-8860.
Thanks again for joining us. I'm Mary Wilson.
And I'm Kurt White. We'll see you again soon.
Brattleboro Retreat is committed to exploring diverse perspectives on mental health. While we invite hosts and guests to share their insights, the views expressed are their own and do not necessarily reflect the policies or positions of the hospital or its staff.